In my mind, there are four basic areas of intermediate piano curriculum that I want to cover with all of my students. Number one, technique. Number two, repertoire. Number three, creative skills such as improvisation or composition. And number four, functional skills.
You're listening to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast from Top Music. Tune in weekly as we interview music teachers and experts from around the world to explore creative activities and ideas that build learning connections in students. Our integrated music teaching approach will deepen your students' understanding of musical concepts, engage them in critical thinking, improve their reading and performance, foster their curiosity, and prepare them for a lifetime of music making. Tim Topham here, and welcome back to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast from topmusic.co. It's great to have you with us for another week and another look into our integrated music teaching model. Now, this is the second last of our series. We've got one more episode next week all about integrated music teaching. And in today's episode, we are going to be letting you hear some integrations in action in lessons. And I thought this would be really instructive for those of you who are still wondering how this actually looks and sounds in a lesson. Now, these lessons that you're going to hear were actually recorded on video. And what I've done with these is I've now added titles on screen explaining what I'm connecting at each moment during the video. So I strongly encourage you, while listening to them now will be a great introduction to them, set aside some time to head to our show notes. That's topmusic.co/episode303. So that you can go and actually watch the videos. Now, they're relatively short, 10 to 15 minutes, but you'll be able to then work through the timestamps and actually see on screen I'm explaining what I'm doing as we go through. Now, for those of you who watched the lesson I emailed a month or two ago with me teaching a student called Finn, you'll recognize one of these videos as that example lesson. However, as I've said, I've cut these down now and edited them, so we're just having a look at the particular connections that I'm making. So even if you did watch that full video in the past, I encourage you to explore this again in the context of integrated music teaching and check out the updated video on the show notes page. Now, also keep in mind that these lessons were not the standard lesson that you might have on a weekly basis with students. They were whole lesson explorations using creativity to build musical skills and theory through practical experience. Now, in most lessons, you simply won't have time for this level and depth of exploration. So do keep that in mind as you listen or watch. The whole point of integrated music teaching is that these activities come as part of the whole lesson package, and you'll jump in and out of them as you go through a regular lesson, but you won't spend a whole lesson on it necessarily. Of course, by checking out these lesson examples, you may realize that you could quite easily spend a whole lesson on something like this if you actually do have the time, perhaps after an assessment or recital or exam program, or maybe with a workshop program if you happen to teach one-on-one and then do group workshops every so often. This can be a great activity to explore. Now, before we dive into the two examples of integration activities from my own lessons, I wanted to share with you some thoughts about IMT from our intermediate repertoire specialist at Top Music, Jana Williamson. Here she is.
Hello, music teachers. If we haven't met before, my name is Jana Williamson, and welcome to my home piano studio in the suburbs of Chicago. I have the privilege of making videos every month for the Top Music membership in a series called Piece by Piece, where I take a different piece of intermediate repertoire and talk about the best ways that we can teach our students how to play it beautifully, how to play it expressively, and how to navigate all the technical demands within it. So pieces like Chopin waltzes or Bach inventions or Mozart minuets, those are the kinds of things that I get to nerd out on every month. I am super excited about the idea of integrated music teaching. And since I get to focus on intermediate repertoire in my contribution to Top Music, I want to just talk about how we can teach our intermediate students in an integrated way. In my mind, there are four basic areas of intermediate piano curriculum that I want to cover with all of my students. Number one, technique. Number two, repertoire. Number three, creative skills such as improvisation or composition. And number four, functional skills such as lead sheet playing, sight reading, accompanying, chord chart playing, all those kinds of things. I'm not including written theory or theoretical understanding as one of those four main elements because I really think that theoretical knowledge and understanding should be infused in every part of an intermediate student's curriculum. It's kind of like the glue that binds everything together. So as I talk about these aspects, I'm assuming that we're talking about understanding of what's happening theoretically in everything that we do. I've heard from a lot of teachers, even if they had a theoretical background in their training as a child, that oftentimes repertoire was studied here and theory was studied entirely separately, and they were never taught how to integrate the two. I think that's an absolute tragedy because it means that theory became really boring, probably, because it didn't relate to any real music. And what they learned in theory was not allowed to actually help them with their repertoire. So that's the first thing. Students can be encouraged to just integrate what they're learning theoretically with the actual real pieces of music that they're playing on the piano. So first, I want to talk about technique. The word technique simply means the movements that we make with our body to make sound on our instrument. It's the same for sport players. You know, the movements that they make with their bodies allow them to kick a ball or swing a baseball bat or slam the volleyball down over the net. So when we're at the piano, technique refers to our sitting posture, our arm alignment, our hand position, everything that we do with our bodies. However, we oftentimes also talk about technique in regards to technical exercises such as scales, chords, arpeggios. In my opinion, intermediate students should be practicing these exercises every day, and they should be cycling through different keys maybe on a weekly basis so that they, in the course of a year, practice many, many different keys. In my studio, students never graduate from their scales. They just might play them faster at a certain point. So the reason why I think this is important and why it ends up integrating with everything else is that by just practicing different scales and arpeggios and chords in various keys, students automatically start to internalize key signatures and what the basic chord structures are within those keys. They can also then find these patterns really easily within their repertoire, which makes the learning of their repertoire pieces much more efficient. And any functional skill study, such as lead sheet playing, is obviously massively improved by knowing your scales and your chords and your chord inversions. Jazz musicians certainly practice their scales all of the time so that they can use them in their work, and we should not be any different. So what about the integration of repertoire with the rest of these areas? This is one thing that I see teachers struggling to know how to do. But students learn best when they make connections across disciplines and across different activities. So how can we do this? Well, students will learn best when they apply any theoretical knowledge, however basic that it is, to what they are learning. As I already said, it will help them learn faster if they can see those chord patterns or scale patterns. Students will also learn best when they can connect what they're doing in their repertoire piece to their creative activities or their functional skills. So an example of this might be whatever chord progression is in their sonatina, they can use that same chord progression in a composition that they're writing, or they can talk about those same chords in a lead sheet that they're learning how to play. Students also learn best when they connect what they're doing in a piece of repertoire with other things that they've done in a lesson, even just another repertoire piece. So maybe a piece they studied a year ago, or it could be something outside of the piano lesson experience, such as something they've done in band at school, or even a non-musical subject such as art class or history class. Now, I'm sure we've all had bright students who've made connections like this without us even trying to encourage it. Students who say, oh yeah, I remember doing that in this other piece, or oh yeah, I heard that kind of thing in my band piece that I'm playing flute in at school, or whatever it is. But it's our job to continue to encourage those connections as well as help other students make them, students for whom this is not as natural of a way to operate within their brain. So here are some basic ways that you can do integration across all four of those disciplines of technique, repertoire, creativity, and functional skills. Whatever key you're playing your scales in for the week, let's say it's D major, or whatever key your new piece for that week is in, maybe it's also D major, you can use that key to improvise and just really solidify what the notes are in that scale. So have the student improvise on the D major scale while the teacher plays a simple chord accompaniment. Another idea might be to play a four chord progression from a piece of repertoire. Like I said, maybe your sonatina has 1-4-5-1, really typical chord progression, right? Instead of just playing that in the way that it's written in that repertoire piece, you could play that in a four chord composing kind of way, or a more pop style way. So like, and you could talk about what you could do with that chord progression and what you could add to it. Another thing you could do is find pop songs that have the same chord progression as the current repertoire piece. We all know that there's a limited number of popular chord progressions, and many of them have been around for hundreds of years. So frequently you can find a pop song that uses at least some of the same progressions as a classical piece of repertoire that you're working on. You can use an accompanimental pattern from a repertoire piece in a composition or in a lead sheet or chord chart arrangement. For instance, if your student is new to Alberti bass and they're encountering that in their sonatina, then a great thing to do is have them try Alberti bass with the triads that they're using in a lead sheet or their own composition. Alberti bass can be quite awkward when you're first learning it, but if you're practicing it more than once because you're practicing with a lead sheet as well as with your sonatina, then it's going to very quickly become more comfortable and more innately easy to play. Lastly, I think you can go through repertoire pieces and find the special chords or the interesting harmonic moments and tie those into what you're doing creatively. If there's just one interesting or unexpected chord, why not try using that in the composition or the improvisation that you're doing with your student? As you can see, there's all kinds of different ways to connect these things. Some of us as teachers are more comfortable doing certain skills. I know for me, I love teaching functional skills, and I find it more difficult to do the creative things such as improvising and composing, but I'm still able to connect these things across the different subjects of a piano lesson. So before I sign off, I want to give you one really specific example. One of the most recent videos I made for Top Music was the Chopin Waltz in A minor, Opus Posthumus. Of course, it sounds like this. And that piece is based on the same chord progression over and over again. It's A minor, D minor, G7 to C. Of course, there are a few other chord progressions and a few other things in the piece, but a lot of the piece is just those four chords. So you can have a great conversation with your student about finding that progression, finding those A minor chords. You can talk about inversions, because sometimes the A minor is in root position and sometimes it's in second inversion. You can find those very quickly. And then you can take that one singular chord progression and talk about, do you know any pop songs that use this chord progression? The other main thing about this particular piece is that it uses this jump waltz bass. Instead of just doing little oompahs your student might encounter when they're an elementary level student or an early intermediate student, we have the low note of the chord displaced by at least an octave. This is an accompanimental pattern that pianists must learn because it shows up, particularly in the Romantic era repertoire, all the time. So one way that I would do to get my students more comfortable with moving all over the keyboard would be to use that type of pattern in a lead sheet arrangement. So I have printed off here Silent Night from the Top Music Easy Christmas Lead Sheets. These are a great resource. The chords in this are extremely easy. It's mostly C, F, and G7. So I'm gonna take that first line and I'm gonna practice my C major chords with that jump waltz bass. Now I have to decide which inversion I wanna use. I could do what I was doing, first inversion, or I could do second inversion. To stick with first inversion. So let's see how that sounds when I put the beginning of the melody in it. And that sounds pretty good. It's different than you might think of Silent Night, but a student could easily put his or her own creative stamp on that while also having practice at doing a jump waltz base, which of course will help them as they play their Chopin waltz. I hope this has given you a few ideas on integrating intermediate piano students' lessons. I wish you all the best in your teaching, and I hope to see you soon within Top Music.
Isn't it cool what you can do with an Alberti bass and a Christmas carol? There's one integration activity that you can steal right away. All right, so now let's check out my lesson with a student called Jono. In this lesson, I use a creative activity of improvisation and harmony to cement his knowledge of the G harmonic and melodic minor scale. So that's looking at technique. So in this way, we're connecting harmony and melody in a particular key, and that's the theory, using improvisation as the activity. So here's Jono and me.
G melodic minor, beautiful. Let's play it together. Can we do it hands together, four octaves?
All right.
Back on a pace, be all right. Two, ready. Going really well. I haven't played that for a very long time.
Did I make a mistake?
No, that was me.
Oh, right.
That was absolutely me. Right, okay, now I want you to play that same thing again. Let's go a little bit faster, and I'm just going to accompany you with a very simple chord progression. Here we go. One, two, three. So a chord progression is just a series of chords that sound kind of cool together.
Yeah.
I'm working in the same key as you, so what key is that?
G minor.
G, yeah, G, and we'll just call it G minor for now. So you know how to play a G minor chord, I think. Beautiful, good. You're playing with your octave as well. Nice job.
Yeah.
That's good. I think that's what you did, isn't it? So this is all hand. Left hand down note in the key of the melodic minor. What's the next note down? No, in the key of the scale. Chord in the key of G. It's the what number note of the scale?
Fourth.
You sure?
Five.
Five, yeah. Do you know what we call that? It's got a musical name.
What's it start with?
D.
Oh, you told me last time. No, I forgot.
Dominant. Dominant, yeah? Dominant because it is the second most important chord in the key of G, right? So let's play a D chord now. When we get to the note D.
D major.
So we're going down to here. Go to the D. And what did you just ask? Is it a D major or D minor? Well, let's use our ears and see if we can work it out. So let's go, let's play through the progression. Ready? And two G minors with the D in the left hand. D minor. And then back to G. So So the question is, does it sound better having a D minor chord here? Or D major? D major. Alright, now why is that? There's a very good reason.
I'm not really sure.
And it's to do with the notes of the harmonic minor scale. Just play the G harmonic minor. G minor. So what do we call that seventh note? Got a special name because we do something funny to it when we play on harmonic minor scale.
Diminished? No. I don't know.
So according to the key signature of G minor,
raised.
Raised what?
Seventh.
Raised seventh, right? According to the key signature, G minor should be down.
Yeah.
Because we've got two flats, right? But we play, because of the tradition in the harmonic minor scale, to raise the seventh note. What does that do to the D minor chord? Turns it into a D major chord. So what you'll find is in any minor key, chords on the dominant tend to be major because of the raised seventh. So let's try our whole progression now with the D major chord and see if it sounds any better. Ready? Scale am I going to use?
G melodic minor. G minor.
Yeah, G minor. I could use melodic or harmonic. So I'll try melodic first.
Alright.
Okay? Yeah, but keep playing that. We'll do it twice through.
Twice, alright.
Okay, ready when you go. I tend to stick to the top part of the piano because I'm obviously going to be playing the chords down here. So if you stick to here or here, it's going to sound pretty good. You ready? Let's give it a shot, see what happens. So why didn't that sound right?
Why isn't it melodic or harmonic?
Well, that's a good question. So that's a note of the
melodic
ascending or harmonic as well. But generally the piece, if it's only got the two flats in the key signature, most of the time, this note can clash with the G minor chord. So when I was kind of improvising, it's going to sound good to stay away from that F sharp. Sorry, there's flat I missed, until you get to the D chord, because that's the note of the D chord. Try to give it one more shot, because you're doing really well, and it got a lot better the second time around. Here we go. Thank you.
Now, in this second lesson with Finn, you'll hear a variety of integrations between repertoire and improv, scales and theory. Again, I strongly recommend watching the video of this lesson, which includes the timestamps and overlay titles explaining what I'm connecting at each point of the video. But if you're listening to this now, try and pick out, what am I actually trying to connect? What knowledge am I trying to help Finn understand through the activities that I'm choosing? All right, let's have a listen.
Actually, let me pull out something you may not have noticed, and that is right at the start, the right hand is somehow out of sync with the left hand rhythmically, because the left hand's like this. So the right hand's got a four note kind of pattern, and the left hand, which is like in multiples of two and four, the left hand's in what time signature? What time signature is the piece?
3/4.
So it would kind of make more sense if the right hand pattern went. Right?
That part did give me a little bit of trouble right at the start, because it just sort of messed with me and it took a while to get used to. So
right.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah. So there's a word that's sometimes used with these kind of cross rhythms. It's quite common in 6/8. Have you ever played a piece in 6/8 before?
Yeah, I would have played many.
Yeah. So 6/8 is kind of 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But you can also divide sixes into twos, right? 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2. And there's that great song from West Side Story that's all, I want to be in America. Yeah, da, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. So these kind of playing around with rhythms like this, super fun to explore. And I just thought I'd pick it up because that could be something that you might want to do in your own composing. There's one other place in the piece where that happens. Where is that? The same kind of awkward rhythmic idea.
I'm going to hazard a guess, but it doesn't look like it, but that part where you go, let me just search it. I've got two guesses, either up here where it's, but that's sort of the same tone as.
So that was bar 19? Okay, yeah. What was your other thought?
Or right at the end when it was. There it goes.
It's that passage, but earlier in the piece. Have a look at bar 37. The right hand's doing a four beat sequence going like this. Right?
Yep.
So the right, like at the start, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Now we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, which is again out of time with the 3/4 waltz feel of the piece. So yeah. Say that again.
That sort of copied over the first part of it. It's almost identical without the switch up, but it goes bar 53, 4, and 54.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Does those two first two. Whatever it is. Yeah. Well picked up. So that's a really interesting compositional device. And if you're aware of it, Finn, you'll notice this in other pieces of music too. And you'll probably notice it because it's kind of hard to play at first, because your head's like, oh, what? This doesn't sync quite right. Chopin is famous for it, does this kind of thing all the time in his music. And that is this idea. Why don't we play around with this, but play it in a different place on the piano?
Right.
So we're on starting on B. It's kind of like an A minor chord, right? They're using the second note of A minor. 2, 3, 5, 4. Sorry, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 2, 3, 6, 5. 2, 3, 6, 5. So I'm thinking, if we're working in A minor, we could probably do something similar if we work in what relative key? What's the most closely related key to A minor?
F.
No. What shares the same? What did you say? C, yeah, because they share the same key signature, right? So could we do 2, 3, 6, 5 in C? Could you try it? That's it, yeah. So exactly the same pattern, yeah? And what if we, in the left hand, do something similar? What's the movement of the left hand in the original? What would you do, how would you describe it?
It is going chromatically down.
Very good, chromatic descent. Oh, such a great student. So what if we did a chromatic descent starting on C with that right hand pattern this time? I have no idea how this is gonna sound. Let's explore.
All right. Do you want me to play here or here?
Your choice.
All right. I'm going to go with up just because that's why I did it.
Okay.
Oh, I'm playing it wrong. My bad.
No, that's right. Oh, wasn't it?
2, 3, 2, 3, 6, 5.
Oh, it sounded good though. What were you doing?
I was just doing it 1, 2, 5. So I was playing on C, not on D.
This?
Yeah.
Oh, I like it. Do it again. Do it again. Do it again.
I was doing. Right hand.
Yeah, so C would be a better finish note, but that's kind of cool, isn't it?
Right.
Ooh.
It really makes it different. It mixes up the play of the song, you know?
Yeah, it does. It may not work, but this is the kind of fun thing that I like doing, just to explore this as an idea. What if? Why don't we play around with this idea of this out of sync thing, right? In a different, let's make up our own pattern in the right hand. And let's go to a new key area. So, I don't know, you pick a key that you like. Major key.
F major.
F, something about F today. So, let's work out a little bit of a pattern in the right hand that we can repeat. And we'll try and do a bit of an out of sync thing. So we're gonna, you completely change now what's on the page. So what can we do note wise in F? Do you want to explore just play around a few ideas?
So F major we have. I think we want to end it on F like they've done it. So I don't think we should start on F.
Okay.
And we should probably use the flat. So maybe something like.
Ooh.
You could use the G. G's better.
Ooh. I like it. It's really nice.
Yeah.
So.
Really
nice. Okay, so what are we going to put? What we've actually, we've actually, yeah, we're not in F anymore. We're in G minor, aren't we?
Turn it to G or stick with F.
Oh, okay.
Is that?
You try it. What do you think? Just playing an F major chord in my left hand with it.
Oh, you're right. That would work. All right.
Come up an octave, Finn.
How do I do it?
Yeah. Okay. So let's muck around with that left hand because. We've actually we're more in a G minor pattern now, I think. So why don't you try a G minor chord in that left hand with it and see what you think.
Right. I'm gonna try.
That was good, that was good.
Yeah, like someone moving up?
Yes. So we've got a few options here. So if we use incantation as a model, if the right hand stays the same, we could move the left hand chord to some different positions. So let's have a think about what other chords we could use in the left hand. We've got G minor. What are some of the other chords we could use?
F.
F, yes, definitely. E major. Now that is going to be quite quirky, but let's try it anyway. In fact, I'm actually, now that I think about it, I know that one's not going to work. And do you know why?
Did you say it's not going to work?
E major is going to be a real clash with this. Have a think about, do you know the scale of G minor?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Can you play just G minor? I think you forgot.
Sorry, so what, I'm still a major.
That's okay. What do we know about the E in the scale of G minor?
Oh, it's flat.
Yeah. So what's the chord maybe rather than E, what could we try?
We could do an E flat.
Try it. Play it.
E flat major.
E flat major, yeah. That sounds like a minor chord to me. What notes are you playing?
Give me a sec.
That's the one. All right, so we've got, you've just picked three chords. Can you remember them?
Yep.
Already sounds a bit like any kind of, sounds a bit like a pop song, doesn't it? We could have fun with that. All right, let's try those three chords with your right hand, your beautiful right hand melody. I love it.
All right. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it. Lovely. Yeah. Why don't you try coming, go down the chords and come back up again.
Go down the chords and come
up. Yeah, back up via F. And if you wanted to, Finn, you could go a bit slower. Stay for two repetitions. That's okay. That's okay, keep going. That is the start of something super, super cool. At the moment, we're using an F natural, not an F sharp, because G minor has an F sharp in it, right? G harmonic minor scale. Would you agree? So we're using a scale that doesn't have an F sharp in it. Could you play that just one octave, G minor, with no raised seventh? That's it. Is that a scale type that you've explored before?
Isn't it G, what is it called? And then don't you raise it on the way down? Nah, I am.
You're thinking, yeah, it is G natural minor. Yeah, and it's the form of the scale that you play. If you're playing a melodic minor scale, that's the thing you were thinking of. The descending form of that's the natural minor. Natural minors tend to, like you could, if I played this, I'm just going to play a G minor chord and a descending line in my left hand. But going with a sharp, d- just doesn't sound the same. So oftentimes natural minor scales are more fun and better to explore when you're doing improvisationary work like we've done today.
As I've said a few times, you'll get much more out of watching these lesson excerpts. So over at topmusic.co/episode303, you'll be able to see these three example excerpts in action. I hope this has helped you understand what integrated music teaching looks like a little bit more. And of course, you may well recognize elements of your own teaching in these demonstrations. And if so, congratulations. It sounds like you're already making connections and building meaning for your students. And I hope that you'll continue to do even more in the future. Well, that's it for the show this week. I hope you've enjoyed it. Now, next week on the podcast, it's the last episode in our series on integrated music teaching. And what we're going to be talking about is building the certificate of integrated music teaching, which is what we're doing right now. We've actually been working on this for months. And I'm going to be joined by our instructional designer here at Top Music, Kimberly Swanson, who will be unpacking our certification program with you all. We'll go into why we've created it, how it's different to other certification programs, the learning outcomes, the assessment, how it all works. Can't wait to share that with you then. I'm Tim Topham, and you've been listening to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye. How do you keep up to date with all the latest trends and research into music education? How do you connect with other teachers around the world and make sure your teaching stays fresh and relevant for students of all ages and stages, both now and into the future? I created our Top Music Pro membership to be the one-stop shop for music teaching resources, training, support, and community, and I'd love for you to come and join us inside. With over 40 comprehensive training courses, hundreds of teaching demonstrations and lesson plans, free monthly sheet music, discounts, and all the business and pedagogy support you could ever need, Top Music Pro is the community you've been looking for. If you're ready to level up your learning from the podcast and join thousands of other teachers in our global network, head over to topmusicpro.com today. If you enjoy this show and want to hear more of our work, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening today. For links and resources mentioned in this episode, visit us at topmusic.co/podcast or check out the show notes. I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast, a production of Top Music. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy your week ahead, and I'll catch you next time.